This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. I want to welcome you today. As always, if you want to check out our previous episodes and podcasts, check us out at voanews.com/upfront. Also, make sure to connect with us on our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, on Instagram, and on Twitter at Upfront Show. Now, it's been a little over a year since the World Health Organization declared the COVID-19 global pandemic. And now it has a new report that says that while COVID-19 cases and death have seen plateaus and declines in new cases and death globally, the numbers are still high. It's also warning countries that experienced a downward trend in the infection rates against relaxing public health and social measures too quickly. The news comes as much of the world, especially the developed world, is inoculating its populations against COVID-19 in what has been termed as the biggest vaccination campaign in history. However, that is a different case in Africa, which, according to reports, the pace of the vaccine rollout falls far short of the global average. Figures show that the continent has so far received less than 2% of the 690 million COVID-19 vaccine doses that have been administered globally. It's a situation that has led many to call for more equitable access to the vaccines. Even the COVAX facility, which we have talked about right here on the show, which is a platform that hopes to deliver vaccine doses to the continent, COVAX will only cover 20% of Africa's population by the end of this year, 2021. So on today's show, we'll look at this and other issues related to the vaccine rollout on the continent, including the hesitancy by some people to receive the vaccine. And joining us on the show today is Dr. Kemi Olugemo, a Nigerian-American neuroscience researcher and healthcare advocate. She joins us from Boston.
Dr. Kemi, it's been a little over 1 year since the WHO declared COVID-19 as a global pandemic, and studies show that in the U.S., African Americans or Black people have suffered higher morbidity and mortality rates from COVID-19 than any other racial groups. What are some of the factors behind this?
Hello, Jackson. Thank you so much for having me today. This is a very important question in terms of why we see a difference in the effect of COVID in Black and Brown communities in the United States. And I think that many people agree that the reason for that is because of systemic issues and systemic racism that has endured for many years that makes people in our communities more likely to have less access to care. Because of these underlying differences, there is a higher proportion of diseases that make it more likely that you would either get COVID or when you get a COVID infection, that your disease is more severe. So leading to hospitalization or death. And those are common illnesses in our community, such as elevated blood pressure, hypertension, diabetes, heart disease, obesity. So these are many of the reasons why we've seen a discrepancy in terms of the excess deaths and disease from COVID in Black and Brown communities in the US.
Okay, so pre-existing conditions, but also how the general healthcare system has over the years historically responded to African-American conditions and pathologies. Now, let's go to the continent in Africa. Early on during the pandemic, there was fear and many experts predicted that Africa would bear a high burden of the coronavirus pandemic. Why have we not seen that happen as yet?
Mm-hmm. So that's a very good question. And then when I think back to your original question about why Black and Brown communities in the US, for example, have been disproportionately affected, we don't think it's because of race, right? So intrinsic genetic differences between ethnicity. Outside of the US and Africa, we've seen a much lower infection rate from COVID and lower deaths. And thankfully, this is, you know, not in line with the original predictions and that people had. I think there are many reasons why we've seen that. So one of those reasons is the older you are, so the elderly are, that's a pre-existing condition, if you will have it, that can make you more likely to get COVID. The average, the median age in many African countries is much lower than that in Western countries. So that accounts for part of it. The other is the climate and the fact that in African countries, we spend a lot more time outdoors, where you're much less likely to contract COVID. And then, you know, I think about possible protective issues, such as there's a difference, for example, in African, African-Americans, people of Black ethnicity, and the densities of a receptor called ACE2 that actually enables the virus to get into your system. And we know that there's a theory that there's a lower proportion among some people in African countries that makes it, you know, less likely that you would get COVID. So these are just some of the reasons. There are probably more. As you know, we're still learning a lot about why there are differences, but I think that these are the obvious ones.
Are you worried that one of the reasons we don't see high mortality rates on the continent could be that we are undercounting or ignoring cases of the disease? And if this is the case, how could that affect efforts to fight this deadly virus?
So there's definitely a risk that the data that we have is skewed, and you're right. So we can only rely on the data that we have. We may not be testing as often as we should, and we may not, we may not be getting, you know, all of the different people, you know, in the cities versus, you know, in the more rural areas. So I think it's going to boil down to leadership in each individual country in terms of, you know, the government and the community coming together to make sure that as a community, we're following guidelines. So in terms of social distancing, wearing masks, and then, you know, for those that have symptoms, making sure that they find a site and access a place where they can get tested. But yeah, you're right. We don't know if the data that we have is absolutely correct.
Have you received your vaccine yet?
I have. I got the Moderna vaccine. Absolutely.
We are chatting with Dr. Kemi Olugemo, a Nigerian-American neuroscience researcher and healthcare advocate. Let's take a quick break and listen to some of your opinions.
My name is Vesigam Kamalevis. Yes, I'm a student of Makerere University Business School. We are not yet sure. You're not sure of how safe the vaccine is, you know, and when we talk to our friends in maybe outside countries now, I was talking to a friend in the United States and they are saying it is hitting so hard on them. The other day I was reading on the newspapers and India is being hit hard on. And you see now like the vaccine on board here is from India. And then you question yourself, why is it hitting them so hard? Yes, they are giving us the vaccine. So such reasons, but would love to take up the vaccination. But as of now, I'm still using what we used to depend on, lemon and all that kind of sort, fruits, yeah.
I'm called Simon. I've not yet been vaccinated, and I'm still very skeptical about the virus. I mean, about the vaccine. I'm still not trusting it. I'm not sure what kind of side effects it might have on my life.
No, I haven't been vaccinated. I don't even know where they vaccinate from, so I don't know. I don't feel like comfortable being immunized because I'm not so sure about the vaccine, though I have to, be obligated as Ugandans to get that vaccine, so probably I will.
My name is Shakul Kawanguzi and I'm in Kampala, Uganda. The reason why I'm not yet vaccinated is that it's very hard for me to access the vaccination center or site. I'm not sure of the vaccination schedule and the right place to go and get the vaccine. I was expecting like to get some information like from our local leaders, like to be sensitizing us, like to be educating us to where to go and get the vaccine. But they are not well informed also, or they are not interested, I'm not sure.
thanks to all of you who sent in your opinions. You are listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. On the show today, we are talking about the COVID-19 vaccine rollout on the continent. And let's go to East Africa, in Somalia, which received 300,000 doses of coronavirus vaccine in March of this year. But healthcare officials in the country say that 2 months later, only a little over a third have been used so far. Somali authorities say that the holy month of Ramadan and vaccine hesitancy has slowed down the uptake. And for more on this, Mohamed Kahir reports from Mogadishu.
130,000 Somalis have taken the vaccine since the World Health Organization shipped the doses in March. The vaccination exercise slowed down significantly in the last month, says Dr. Oba Farah, the Director of Family Health at Health and Social Service Ministry.
We saw a reduction of vaccine uptake in the middle of April, and in coincidence, Ramadan, this was the main reason. The other myths are about the clothing, especially in European countries, they stopped using. The myth that Somali people believe that the vaccine can cause infertility.
The government has embarked on an awareness campaign to utilize the remaining vaccine doses before they expire in 2 months. Farah says the Minister of Health will use all available opportunities to meet the target.
There's a campaign ongoing till the rollout of vaccine in March. We utilize it, all the channels, possible channels, TV, radio, social media, and bodies around the city. We use it, our health staffs, our actors in the country, and our Islamic advisory group. And above all, we use female health workers who go door by door informing all the people the importance of taking vaccine.
Somalia has a weak healthcare system made worse by the long periods of instability in the country. The Horn of African nation, however, has tried to contain the coronavirus since the first case was recorded in mid-March of last year. Islamic scholars have unanimously agreed that receiving the vaccines during Ramadan for medical purpose does not affect religious obligations. Sheikh Abdul Hay Sheikh Adam explains. He says the scholars have agreed that the COVID-19 vaccines or any other injection during the holy month of Ramadan performed through the veins or joints will not nullify the fast. He said the medicine must not directly go to the stomach. COVID-19 is a disease caused by the coronavirus. Dr. Abdi Nasir Ibrahim Mahmoud is the director of the National Call Center for COVID-19 in Mogadishu. Mahmoud says the center has received 18,000 calls each day in the past 2 months. He says there are far hospital referrals for callers with severe symptoms related to the virus. He says call centers also boost the awareness campaign on the significance of taking the vaccine. So far, Somalia has recorded more than 740 fatalities related to the infection, according to the Ministry of Health. Mohamed Kahiye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
Thanks, Mohamed Kahiye, for that report. Let's continue our conversation with Dr. Kemi Olugemo.
Now, I've seen reports that at the current rate at which countries like Nigeria, it would take almost a decade to inoculate the entire population in Nigeria against COVID-19. We know that this is partly due to the lack of access to the vaccines themselves, but how much of this would you say has to do with, you know, that hesitancy by some people receive the vaccine?
So I'm not sure that we can explain access issues by hesitancy alone, particularly in a country like Nigeria. For many of the developing countries, so outside of the Western regions, we rely heavily on COVAX, the alliance that the World Health Organization has with the European Commission to enable equitable vaccine access for really the entire world. And, you know, Nigeria now has access to at least one or two vaccines. I know that Ghana was the first country to receive COVID-19s under this particular initiative. But I think, you know, this is going to be a global effort in terms of making sure that there's enough access, you know, within the country to vaccines. In terms of hesitancy within a country like Nigeria, I think some of the reasons may be similar to what we see here. So, you know, some of them are, a lot of people rely on their faith, or they perhaps think that they're not at a high risk because they don't have the right information. I know that many people worry that the vaccines can alter your DNA, which is absolutely not correct. Some people worry about fertility issues. There's no evidence for that. But you know, when you look at the issue of hesitancy within the US, I think that there are some things that are intrinsic to the United States, such as political climate and overall anti-science, you know, thinking. And when I say that, unfortunately, I think about people who are just generally anti-vaxxers, even before COVID started. So, you know, we know that the vaccines for COVID were developed very quickly, and as a matter of fact, the fastest vaccines that we've ever had. But one thing a lot of people need to remember is that no process was skipped in terms of getting these vaccines to emergency use authorization.
It was just compressed.
It was compressed. Many things happened at the same time rather than in a stepwise fashion. There was scientific collaboration with companies that normally would be competing with each other. Mm. There was partnership with the government and private agencies and nonprofit agencies. And we had been working on the science for many years.
Absolutely.
I think
that's a very important point to make to our listeners, is that some of these vaccines had already been in development. I think that the timeline was just compressed. Not that they had to leave out some things so that they can, you know, create the vaccine. So that, I think that's
absolutely,
yes.
There were no steps that were skipped. So you start in animal studies, those steps were there. You have your chemistry and manufacturing controls, those steps were there. You start in phase one studies and then in patients. So none of those were skipped. And, you know, most of the side effects that happen from vaccines happen early. They happen in the first couple of months after you've received the vaccine. And none of these drugs were approved until we had, you know, that period had elapsed, where we know that, you know, we can collect enough safety data to make a risk-benefit assessment. So when you think about the risks of COVID, and you think about the risk of getting the vaccines, in terms of even the safety data that we have that shows very small side effects that could be severe, I think that the risk-benefit ratio is undoubtedly very clear.
What advice would you give to people who are hesitant to receive the vaccine?
So I think that there's nothing wrong with having questions, and questions they're good. It means you're paying attention and you're listening. But I think that people need to be open to getting the information so that they can make the best possible decision. There are lots of people who are working on vaccine hesitancy and getting this information out to people and making sure that there's access. One of those is an organization that I'm involved with, a nonprofit called Women of Color in Pharma. And what we've done is make a concerted effort to educate people about the overall vaccine development process, the steps that were taken, why it was fast, what the safety data shows us, how effective the vaccines are. They're very effective. Once you get two doses of Moderna or Pfizer, or you get your one dose of Johnson & Johnson, your risk of getting a severe illness or dying is extremely low compared to if you don't get the vaccine. So I would say that people need to ask the right questions, get the right data. People need to go to familiar places. So it's the safe spaces, that are important in getting the information to people. And we have protections in place, even after you get the vaccine, to get continuing accumulation of safety data to continue monitoring the effect, especially in populations that may not have been studied adequately in clinical trials. Mm. So I would say that people really need to ask as many questions as you need to ask. You know,
and leave space for learning, though. But there are people who are asking just the questions for the sake of asking the questions, but they're not getting anything out of it, because I feel like they just want to compound whatever position that they're in and the hesitancy they have, regardless of what information they intake.
You're absolutely right. People can ask questions for the sake of being difficult. For those people, I would say, think about Russian roulette. You know, you're taking your chances in terms of not just your health, but those you love. So there are many of us who can get vaccinated right now because we're eligible, but some can't. Children can't. So young children, you know, babies, toddlers, even though they may be less likely to get severe cases, they can get COVID and they can die from COVID. So I would say think about your loved ones and your friends who you're not protecting by getting the vaccine. Ultimately, if this is about freedoms, you're not going to gain any freedoms by not getting the vaccine, because ultimately, if as a society we don't get herd immunity, we're never going to go back to normal. Absolutely. The economy is not going to recover. Travel is not going to be the same. People are not going to be able to go out freely like we were before the pandemic. So I would say people need to ask these hard questions.
In case you're just joining us, welcome. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. I'm joined on the show by Dr. Kemi Olugemo, a Nigerian-American scientist and healthcare advocate. Now, like I said in the beginning of the show, there is worry among the healthcare community that access to the vaccines, that's the COVID-19 vaccines that are currently on the market, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Moderna, and others, that access is skewed to the advantage of the more developed countries. Now, the World Health Organization says that less than 2% of the almost 700 million COVID-19 vaccine doses that have been administered globally have been in Africa. That is only 2%. The WHO also says that only 45 African countries of the 55 on the continent have received vaccines, and that the pace of the vaccine rollout falls far behind its more developed counterparts. What does Dr. Kemi think about this?
Millions of Americans and others in developed countries have received their first shots. But does this matter if Americans and others in these developed countries gain access to the vaccine, but the rest of the world is still struggling with access?
No, it's absolutely insufficient. We need it. So a pandemic, by definition, means the entire world is affected by an infectious disease. So you cannot get rid of a pandemic until the world reaches herd immunity, which is at least 70% of people getting vaccinated. So you're absolutely right. We're not going to go back to normal until people take this seriously and get the information and get vaccinated.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the politics of this. The Biden administration recently announced that it supports a proposal to relax or do away with the intellectual property right protections of the coronavirus vaccines. But why was this an important move?
Well, this is an important step so you can have more companies who were not involved in the original manufacturing of the vaccines, so you can have them be able to produce vaccines and produce them at scale. You know, we mentioned herd immunity. We're very far from that in terms of a global perspective. And that's not going to happen until we open up the ability for as many generic manufacturers as possible or other companies to be able to make vaccines and scale them and get them out to people in the communities. So I applaud that step. I think that's, you know, that was absolutely the right thing to do. I also applaud the Biden administration for joining COVAX, the COVID Vaccines Alliance, as I mentioned at the beginning, because I think the previous administration really wasn't committed to participating on a global scale and a global perspective. But, you know, we've discussed the reasons why this is critically important.
Now, some health experts are worried that, you know, the viral variants that we've been seeing around in countries like Brazil, South Africa, that, you know, they're already complicating vaccination drives around the world. Should we be worried that the current vaccines we are receiving might be rendered ineffective by these new variants?
So we know that the current vaccines do give us some protection. We don't know the extent, and it's possible that they're not as strong as the original strain that we were used to. We also know that more than likely we're going to need boosters. So there are many other vaccines that we get boosters for, and probably 9 to 12 months after getting vaccinated, all of us are going to need boosters to sort of rejuvenate the immune system and make us, you know, able to continue to make those antibodies if you encounter the infection. So yes, there's definitely a threat from variants. That's also another reason to mask up when you're in crowded spaces and public places. But I see, you know, in terms of the boosters that are being developed, they're going to keep up with the variants. But we also know that some of the vaccines that we have now do offer some level of protection. So we're not 100% where we need to be, but it's a risk that we need to be continually monitored.
Mm. As we come to the end of our conversation today, Dr. Kemi, talk to us, what is happening with India? I mean, we've seen in the last couple of weeks, high infection rates, high mortality rates, people dying. What has been happening there?
So,
and I guess the question would be, what are some of the lessons we should learn as developing countries on the continent?
Yeah, so what's happening in India is absolutely astonishing and devastating. Just a few months ago, the Prime Minister announced, you know, how well they were doing, and they were one of the leaders in terms of, you know, the COVAX initiative and being able to manufacture and distribute vaccines through their Serum Institute. So, you know, what's happening right now is really quite unfortunate. Not, you know, being privy to, you know, being on the ground, you know, of course, I rely on media reports. And my understanding is that, you know, some people, unfortunately, you know, because they felt safe too soon, stopped, you know, continuing the practices that we know keep people safe in terms of social distancing, in terms of gathering in large crowds, and in terms of, you know, not using a mask. And by and large, many of these people had not been vaccinated. So you can see how that would be dangerous. Hopefully things will turn the corner now that a lot of countries are really invested in supporting India. But as I mentioned before, you know, as globally, we're not going to get herd immunity until every country is able to, you know, get there individually.
At this point, should we say herd immunity is a fallacy? Is that a real thing? I mean, we've been hearing about herd immunity for a while.
I certainly hope not. It's very important for us to continue to try to achieve this goal, because as difficult as it is, continuing in the manner that we are right now without herd immunity is worse. So I think you need to sort of pick your poison and keep pressing on towards the goal.
Let's not have any victory laps yet.
Definitely no victory laps. Listen, we're going to be dealing with COVID for many years to come, unfortunately. I mentioned the boosters. I mentioned the strains that viruses naturally mutate. It's probably going to end up like something like flu that, you know, every season we have to sort of worry about. Ebbs and flows.
Mm. Dr. Kemi, thank you very much for speaking to us today. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. I want to thank Dr. Kemi Olugemo, who joined us from Boston. Many thanks to all of you who tuned in, whether you tuned in online or on radio, and also to all of you who sent in your opinions. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. I'm at Upfront Africa. That's my personal Twitter handle. But you can also catch up on Upfront Show on Facebook, where we are almost a million strong. Until next time, I'll catch you right here. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye, Africa.
Hello. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.